Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, at BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yeah, we are living in a different world at the moment thanks to COVID-19. And I'm going to catch up a yarn with Susie Brown, who's from the Australian Parents for Climate Action, founder and national director, for the statement asking the federal government to fund solar for every school and every childhood centre as part of COVID-19 recovery. On the line, we've got Susie. Susie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, great to be here. I'm well, thanks. I'm speaking to you from the Wathaurong lands down in Victoria.
Beautiful.
Yeah, a bit colder down here.
A bit colder. Yeah, I'm sending me a pair of shorts and singlet yarning with you, Susie.
Oh,
so, yeah,
I'm
thinking
so
of you. And also thinking of you, Victorians, regarding what you're going through, a second wave with COVID-19. And look, that's a topic we're talking about at the moment with you, Susie, COVID-19, and with the Australian Parents for Climate Action founder and national director, calling on the federal government to fund solar for every school and every childhood centre as part of COVID-19 recovery. So we're looking at two good things here. Well, climate change, climate action, but also employment. So shed some light on the discussion and what you're asking the federal government to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we're asking for the federal government to fund solar and batteries for every school, childcare centre and early learning centre like kinders and preschools in Australia that don't currently have them. So we estimate it's about at least 40% that don't have solar, and the vast majority would not have batteries, of course, because they're relatively new. And so installing solar like this across the country would create an incredible amount of jobs because, of course, schools and childcare centres are in every town and every city and region of Australia. So we estimate, the research shows it would be around 7,000 jobs across the country.
In the renewable energy industry, yes.
That's right, for people like solar installers and manufacturers of solar panels or batteries, the retailers that are selling the panels and so on.
So, it'll probably save money regarding bills as well, annual energy bills.
Exactly. So this is the biggest strength, we believe, for the schools themselves, is that they would save a lot of money on their energy bills. So the research done for us by Beyond Zero Emissions shows that a large school would save around $114,000 a year on their bills through having batteries and solar together, and a small school would save around $12,700 a year.
So, well, when you look at $114,000 saved, I mean, that's employment for more teachers at the table too.
Exactly. So that's even more jobs than the 7,000
yes.
I mentioned. Yeah, you could employ more teaching staff, which is what most schools and childcares desperately need.
And also about the greenhouse gas emission as well per year.
Yeah, that's right. So this program, again, if all of the schools and childcares were to get solar and batteries, the research shows it would be about 1.5 million tonnes of carbon emissions that would be saved every year. So that's, you know, a real benefit to bringing our Australia's emissions down. We're currently polluting way too much into the atmosphere, and so we see this as a great program to contribute to cutting those emissions.
So we hope the federal government comes to the table and with an open mind. When you look at those numbers that you've just mentioned, well, the phrase common sense comes to the table, but common sense sometimes is not common because people don't run with the so-called common sense that go figure, so to speak. Isn't the case,
yeah.
Susie?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, it's really obvious that renewable
exactly.
energy, particularly solar and also wind turbines, financially a no-brainer, like total common sense. But unfortunately, the government doesn't always realise that, you know, that's the most obvious way to go, and they're still talking about supporting new gas mining and still supporting coal, which is actually more expensive now than renewable.
Well, exactly. And when the Australian government, the federal government, goes back to the UN table, they can put across the table that we're doing a bit regarding climate action, yes?
Exactly, yeah. If they get on board with these sorts of programs,
exactly,
we can really act instead of, you know, just kind of arguing around targets and things like that.
Well, I always said, well done is better than well said. So we need action. And what you're talking about here, your organisation, Australian Parents for Climate Action, founder and national director, well, that's what we're talking about. Have some action with common sense and save money and have jobs at the table. I mean, we're in COVID-19, so we need to do what we need to do to get economy back on track, yep, and look after the globe, so to speak, Mother Nature.
Yeah, that's right. And coming out of the COVID-19 shutdown, it's a huge opportunity to shift our economy in a much more positive way. Mm. We've never been at such a turning point, really, have we? So let's use it for good instead of just going back to the old ways of doing things like, you know, supporting coal and gas.
Well, probably a bad example to say, and with respect to loved ones we've lost along the way because of COVID-19, but COVID-19 could be the angel in disguise regarding Mother Earth, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely sending us a message, I believe.
Thank you. That's right. And we as First Nation people, we are all ears to what Mother Earth says, and we take on board, you know, spiritually and with the signs of the animals and the plants.
That's well said. Exactly right.
Beautiful yarn with you. Thank you very much, Susie. So where are you at in regards to this approach with the federal government?
Yeah, we've got an open letter that we're calling on the community to sign on to. So we'd love your listeners to go to our website and put their name on the open letter.
Okay.
So you can find it at our website, which is ap4ca.org. So Australian Parents for Climate Action, ap4ca.org.
All right, beautiful. There it is. Well, thank you very much to Sharon, Susie. All the best to you. Look, you stay warm, sister, and stay safe, and we'll yarn soon, my friend.
Great. Thanks so much. It's been great talking to you.
Bye, Susie.
Okay, bye.
A deadly yarn there. Susie Brown, her name is Australian Parents for Climate Action, founder and national director, looking at the federal government, approaching the federal government to fund solar for every school and early childhood centre as part of COVID-19 recovery. In their findings, if the federal government came to the table and acted on it, they would be saving about $114,000 in annual energy bills per large school and $12,700 per small school. It also will create about 7,000 jobs in renewable energy industry and also save about 395,000 tonnes of greenhouse gas emissions per year, so which is good for employment, which is good for our students, good for employment for teachers as well, extending the staff at schools, and also good for Mother Earth, the climate, global climate. So a very good conversation. So hope the government comes on board and acts on that. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong. Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black, that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. Yarnum with the Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from Macquarie, and come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns as BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray a call. Let's have a yarn. Too deadly.
Hey, what you doing, your mob? It's me, Bushtaka Bungie, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, your daily Bob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know, at BBM, Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, extra care and vigilance is needed in aged care to protect people living with dementia. Dementia Peak Body acknowledges the devastating impact that COVID-19 is having on older Australians, particularly on people living with dementia, who are some of the most vulnerable people in the community. We're going to have a deadly chat with the CEO of Dementia Australia. We have Marie McCabe on the line. Marie, very good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Trevor. Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, thinking of your mob down there in Victoria in regard to COVID-19 and the second wave has come through. But in the space you're working in, thinking of our elders and our people who are living with dementia, and you're talking about extra care and vigilance is needed to protect people living with dementia, also the people working with them, yes?
Absolutely, and this time is certainly distressing and concerning for everyone, and for people living with dementia where their cognition is impaired and they may not understand exactly what's going on. It's really important that we are able to put ourselves in their position and to be able to care for them and provide information that really supports them and guides their understanding as to what's happening around them.
Yeah, so just enlighten us in regarding dementia. Once with dementia, are you with dementia for the rest of your life?
Unfortunately, Trevor, that is the case. Mm-hmm. And dementia is the second leading cause of death in Australia after heart disease and the leading cause of death of women. It's a disease of the brain. It's progressive. And unfortunately, right now, there is no cure. And that's why research into dementia is so important into the areas of prevention, care, and ultimately to find a cure.
And so, Marie, with dementia, it's a mental disease. And does it affect you physically as well?
It absolutely affects people physically, Trevor. And what happens is that cells in the brain die off, and depending on the part of the brain, then it might be the part of the brain that controls motor function, and so people's movement becomes impaired. And you'll find for many people living with dementia, that's exactly what happens, particularly in the later stages of the disease.
Okay. And so let's talk about the staff. I mean, like a hell of a job and the work that they do, you know, and working with passion and looking after our elders in that sense. Tell us about the staff and work they're doing. Yes.
Yeah. I'm so glad you raised that, because the staff really are amazing and the work that they do is incredible. And they care for people that are the most vulnerable people in our society, particularly at the moment. And they do so with generosity, with passion. And right now, this is a time of increasing anxiety for many staff, and particularly in some states such as Victoria, we've got a number of residential care homes where there are COVID outbreaks. And that is very difficult for staff, because they're concerned about the health and well-being of the people that they're caring for,
yes,
their own health and well-being, and of course the health and well-being of their families. And they have a tough job at the best of times, but to add COVID to this really is it's very stressful for many people.
And stressful for families as well, who probably, because of COVID-19 and the shutdown isolation, that they're not allowed to visit as well.
Exactly, and that's been devastating for families and for people living in residential care, and especially people living with dementia, Trevor. And one of the challenges is that when people living with dementia don't get the stimulation that they would normally get from visits from families and loved ones, what happens is that their cognitive ability can decline. And unfortunately, that's not something that can be restored for most people living with dementia.
Sure. And so when you look at family visiting patients as such, that is a bit of medicine, isn't it, for the patient in regard to the emotional sense, the physical and the mental sense, of course.
Absolutely. And for many people living with dementia, family and loved ones are often there supporting their care. So, you know, they may be there at meal times, assisting them with meals. It may be that they're helping them of the morning with their daily routine. And of course, you know, being with someone that you love is really important. And where there are outbreaks and people can't visit, we've seen some providers go to some fabulous lengths to make sure that people living with dementia and other residents have contact with family by phone, by video link, by sending emails and messages. And it's that contact is so important.
Sure. Do you feel as though the government is doing their bit regarding helping your industry as such and helping elders with dementia?
I do, Trevor. I think the government has pulled out all stops, and I think this is such an unprecedented event in our lifetime. And there is no right path. for dealing with this. And, you know, it's a matter of getting in there and doing everything possible. And I think that the government has actually pulled out all stops to take care of our community, our most vulnerable people, and to do everything that they can to make a difference at this time.
Fantastic. And for people out there who are dealing with dementia or need support or help or education, is there a National Dementia Helpline as such?
Absolutely. Please call the National Dementia Helpline on 1800 100 500. Our team of experts are there to provide information, support, whatever it is that you're looking for. And also our website, dementia.org.au, and that's really rich with resources, and that covers so many areas and topics.
Fantastic. Marie, thank you so very much for sharing. All the best to you and your deadly team and your family as well. Look, stay safe, stay warm, and we'll talk soon, Marie.
Thank you so much, Trevor, and thank you to your listeners.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Trevor. Bye now.
Deadly Young there with the CEO of Dementia Australia, and that's Marie McCabe, and just talking about the extra care and vigilance needed in aged care to protect people living with dementia. And look, fantastic work that they do there in regarding looking after elders with dementia, a horrible disease. And it's when receiving, when you get dementia, then you live with that for the rest of your life. So it affects you not only mentally, as I just found out, but also physically as well. So look, thoughts, love, go going out to people with dementia, to our elders out there, and also the space that we're living in at the moment, COVID-19, and Victorians and New South Wales, thinking of you, mob, as well. Second wave has come through, and if you're out and about, yeah, wear a mask down that way. That's what I like to say. Have you say Yarn Up Strong, add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Number you need to call for National Talk Black, and Yarn Up Strong here with the Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your deadly program, National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns as BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416.
In Yarrabah, over the range in Yarraba.
Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It's I, Trevor Tim, 20 Trev Murray from the Curry, live on First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns as BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. All right, we've got the Which Way Yarning segment. That's with the Edmonton Police. And Which Way Yarn is proudly sponsored by Pocone IGA, Brinsmead, Edmonton. They give us a box of fruit here at Bummer Bripper Media for our school-based traineeship. Healthy living, healthy lifestyles, what we talk about here. Fantastic. And with the yarn, we got Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay from Edmonton Police. Senior Sergeant, good morning. How are
you? Good morning. How are you, Trevor?
Fantastic. Great to see you. Look, thanks for coming in, as always, my brother. Our topic today, dangerous driving habits.
Yes.
Let's talk about that, open up that conversation.
Yeah, so Queensland Department of Transport and Main Roads have a new safety campaign, which they do each year. Mm-hmm. And this one, they're focusing on dangerous driving habits. And their campaign's targeting driving habits from the 3rd of August through to the 6th of September. Mm-hmm. When we think about dangerous driving, we normally do think of the Fatal Five.
Yes.
And but they want to highlight some of the other bad habits that we have on the road.
Let's talk to Fatal Five first, my friend, just to remind the people.
Yep, Fatal Five is always speeding, drink driving, seatbelts and restraints, and fatigue. And with technology, that certainly highlighted distraction as our fifth one.
Yes.
So that's their mobile phones and you know, even the old chocolate milk in the one hand and a pie in the other can be distraction, you know.
Is that right? Okay, so that's illegal to eat and drink?
Well, look, if you had an accident and we could point at that was the cause of the accident, there's the offence. Yep. Many people manage to, you know, drive, drink, and eating a chocolate bar or whatever they need to do, and they're not a hassle on our roads. But it's when it's all of a sudden
an accident, then that could be the reason for it, and then you could be fined for it.
There's the offence. That's exactly
there's
right.
There's the offence. Okay. Yep. So that's the Fatal Five, and what are the messages
there? So look, we're talking about bad habits on the roads. So, and we can always see other people's bad habits, you know. I mean, we all have our pet hates, you know, whether it's the one that, you know,
tailgating
doesn't, yeah, look, tailgating is a good one, and it's one of the campaign's focuses.
Okay.
And it's dangerous because if someone does need to pull up suddenly, well, then you're going to crash in the back of that vehicle.
But if you hit someone in the back, you're at fault.
You sure are, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And not the person in front.
No, that's right. Yeah. So that's why we ask that we leave a safe distance. And
some people tailgate because of the be in their bonnet or frustrated with you, so they do that. Yeah. But if the accident is caused, then it's you're at fault because you're the one tailgating.
Absolutely. So you're the one tailgating. So you've got to, you know, be able to leave a safe distance to stop.
Exactly.
And the way they measure a safe distance is do the old 2 second rule. You know, they pass the vehicle in front of you passes a post. Count for 2 seconds, and then you pass the post.
Okay,
and,
there you go.
And that's with all speeds.
Yes.
Obviously, yes. 100 kilometres an hour, your 2 seconds going to give you a greater distance than 60.
Yes.
But it's still, we consider that to be a safe distance.
Okay, fair enough. So what are the messages there?
Yeah, so the other one they're talking about is failing to give way. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is an important one because there's many very serious crashes that occur because people have failed to give way.
Mm.
And, you know, that's the old give way sign that, you know, we pass every Monday morning when we drive through
it.
And we just power on through because there's hardly any traffic. And then there's that one day.
Habit. bad happens, what we're talking about.
Yeah, and that's that one day that we go through that sign and we find that there is a vehicle there and we have that collision, you know. And and I know I've used this example before on this show, but I go through a stop sign every day on my way to work and I stop religiously at that stop sign. Two reasons. One is it's a stop sign and it's safe to do so. You should be stopping. But the other thing is I've got my children in the car. They're all getting older now, so they're coming towards looking at getting driver's license in the next few years.
Okay.
We're creating those good driver habits.
Yeah. So they're watching you.
They're watching you.
The kids are watching you.
And, and I can assure you, if every day I drove through that stop sign, when they got their license and they left from home, they would do the same thing.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
You know, we need to, you know, children are impressionable. We need to reinforce those good behaviours in their driving.
Yep.
So, yeah, look, if nothing else, we're saving you money if you create good driving habits because you're not getting those tickets, you're not finding yourself in front of the courts, and, you know, that's good enough reason for me. Or fear of death or injury from a traffic accident.
And look, if not a fatal, then the dramas that you've got to go through regarding the pranged up car, the points if you're in the wrong, the fine, conversing with the other person, getting their details, paying for their damages, I mean, all the above. And it's something that we don't need.
No, that's right. Yeah.
And I always say we're going to have our fair share of problems in life, so why go looking for problems?
Exactly.
You know, or creating them.
And if you're late and you're in a hurry, you know, you're really going to be late if you crash your car up, you know.
Well, so, exactly.
You know, give yourself a bit of time, you know, plan your trip, leave a bit earlier if you need to. And, you know, and if you are late, look, today you're going to be late. So, like you say, better to get there. Better not to be pulled.
Get in the car, text the person you're going to meet. Listen, I'm sorry, I'm running a bit late here.
Yeah.
Bear with me. I'll see you when I get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Then the pressure's off as well. Then you're not looking for the speed.
That's exactly
They know, hey, take your time, it's all good. I'll just order the coffee, I'll wait till you come.
I know.
You can slow the process down, don't you?
Yeah,
you
know? And people don't want to see police. We don't want to have to pull you up. You know, I lost count of how many times someone commits a minor traffic accident, traffic offence, and then we pull them over and find other offences in the car, you know. So covertly just play by the rules, get through the traffic, you know, and... you won't get come to our attention in any way, you know.
Well, if you're pulling someone over because they went through a stop sign, for example, you know, like I said, well, they did wrong, they're going to get fined, whatever, but then you're checking over the car. If there's a broken tail light or something, then they're going to get fined for that too,
exactly.
Aren't they?
You know obstructed number plates.
Yeah, you there
know,
you go.
Defective so, vehicle.
I mean, do due diligence, but if you're not doing it, then you're in the process of doing get it done quickly because if you get pulled over, you're going to hit for about 3, 4, 5 different offences.
Yeah, and they add up. You know, your fines they're not cheap.
Yeah.
And, you know, and look, no one likes to get a fine, but that's all you know, structured around changing your driving behaviour. So, you know, it's meant to hurt and it's meant to be uncomfortable.
Exactly. But see, the thing is, like I said, some people talk about you police officers revenue. But if you done wrong and if you got boily tyres or if you haven't got a broken tail light, it's you.
Yeah.
The man in the mirror, the woman in the mirror.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You're just doing your job.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And you know, like, so if the broken tail light is there and your last pay package, you were supposed to get it, but you decided to buy a carton for the party.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff. It's just
And
thinking
those what would relatively be minor offences, say, let's say the baldy tyre.
Yeah, sure.
They're the ones that go on to create a fatal accident.
Well, that's true, too.
Know? And that's why those laws are there. And, and
prevention.
You know, so absolutely, you've probably been driving around quite what you feel safely for a week or so with this baldy tyre, but it's when you needed to stop or you needed to corner and then that car left the road or had a collision with another vehicle, you know, that's when it becomes a lot more serious, you know. So, look.
Well, no matter how good a driver you are, If the car's sliding because it's baldy tyres, you've got a drip no matter how good of a driver you are.
You're a passenger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hang on to the steering wheel. That's
exactly.
You're only a passenger, yep.
So very good point. So key messages. When you look at we're doing pretty good up here in Queensland regarding COVID-19, Glenn, but when you look at down south there, I mean, talking about people who are supposed to be in isolation or lockdown, people out and about, the police are doing their job. People are getting fined for $4,000.
Yeah.
That's the case, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's frustrating and it's never, you know, it's being locked down is a difficult thing. But, you know, coming into quarantine, so if you come into the state from one of these hotspot areas, You do have to self-quarantine or you go into our quarantine hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I can imagine myself in a small room, I'll be climbing the walls after two weeks, you know. So I suppose some of these people, that's the sacrifice they're going to make if they want to come into our state.
Yep.
But they do need to isolate because we don't want this virus to
rise. And you can't be telling porky pies.
No.
Because we're talking about a disease here, yeah, a virus that's contagious, you know what I mean? And it's killing people. So,
yeah,
the government and the law has got to get strong because people are telling porkypies and it's creating havoc. It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, in the north, you're right, we're in a good place at the minute. You know, we can travel quite freely. Our Indigenous communities aren't under a lockdown. The vehicle checkpoints have gone.
Yeah.
You know, we can assume if there's going to be positive cases in the north that we will most likely go back to the scenario that we had. And that's difficult for people to see themselves going back into those.
And we don't want to go back there, so let's abide by the rules.
Do the right thing. Report bad behaviour too. If someone knows that someone should have been into a lockdown and they've seen them leave the residence, or they know that they're not,
Make the call.
Make the call. Give the police a call, and we'll go and check up on them. And you know, because like you say, if this thing, you know, rears its ugly head in the north here, we're back into lockdown.
Exactly. We don't want to be in the same situation, Victoria's, and thinking of those guys, big time. But the phrase comes to the table again, we are all in this together, aren't we?
We are, absolutely, yep. And this is a virus that doesn't target any specific persons for any reason, you know. It's actually...
But the vulnerable is the elderly, of course.
They suffer the consequence.
Our mob and community. Brother, look, thank you very much, Glenn. Great talking with you. All the best to you and your deadly team.
Yeah.
And your family. Look, stay safe and we'll yarn soon, my friend.
Sure. Good on you. Thanks, Trevor.
All right. Beautiful yarn there. Senior Sergeant Glenn Delay from Edmonton Police. And that segment, Which Way Yarning, and proudly sponsored by Piconi, IGA, Brinsmead and Edmonton. And they give us a box of fruit here at Bumabibra Media for our school-based traineeship, healthy living, healthy lifestyle. Yarning with the Bully One, Trevor, Tim, Trendy, Trev Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM, Bumabibra Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service.
Hey, you mob, this is Tanya Kernigan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. That's BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabo callings on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. The new data reveals the true extent of homelessness for Australian veterans. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Dr. Fiona Hilferty from University of New South Wales and just talk about this sad affair. A very good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good, thanks, Trevor. Good morning to you too.
Thank you for coming to the program. So, very sad affair in regarding homelessness for Australian veterans. Please paint the picture in regarding the numbers and how we're sitting with this awful state.
Yeah, well, the research was completed in last year in 2019, and it was a study that was, it's a national study that was funded by the Department of Veterans Affairs and done by a team of researchers at the University of New South Wales and the University of Adelaide, as well as we had three veterans on our team. So the idea was to look at the prevalence of veteran homelessness, how many veterans are homeless within Australia, because it's something that hasn't been known for quite a while. Although international research does show that veterans are overrepresented in homeless groups. So our research definitely confirmed that. We used survey data that was collected from more than 4,000 veterans and extrapolated it to a much larger population and found that each year in Australia, approximately 5,800 veterans are experiencing homelessness. But the researchers do think that the rate is likely to be higher because that number only relates to a group of contemporary veterans. So those that have enlisted and transitioned out of the ADF from 2001.
Yeah, thank you for that information there, Doctor. In regards to the reasons in the survey, what was found regarding the reasons of veterans being homelessness?
Yeah, so the veterans definitely experience are overrepresented in the homeless population in Australia. And so they share a number of risk factors with everybody else in the population. So known pathways into homelessness are mental illness, poverty and substance abuse. The veterans as a group, though, also experience unique risks that I think, you know, can connect them as having a higher prevalence of homelessness. And so these unique risks of veterans include being discharged from the ADF, particularly after illness or injury. Being discharged from the ADF is a vulnerable period for a number of veterans. Also, another risk factor.
Would it be the transition regarding employment as well, you know, and also probably the mental scar from war itself?
Yes, thanks, Trevor. That's right. So deployment is definitely a risk factor for some veterans. It's clear too that a number of veterans that we interviewed that were homeless had not received the qualifications that they wanted to get during their time in service, and so, you know, when they left the military, were unable to get full time permanent jobs, and so their life following service was one of insecure and temporary positions.
Okay, what about our First Nation veterans, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islanders? Any information on after the survey was done?
Yeah, so unfortunately not in our study, but there is another national study that looked at homelessness within cities. So it collected data and was released in 2018. It was released in 2018 by Professor Paul Flatow, and he found that in the group that were rough sleeping and also staying in emergency accommodation, that Indigenous ADF personnel were highly represented. So Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders make up about 2% of the Australian Defence Force, but in that homeless population group, so those that were rough sleeping in emergency accommodation, was about 16%, so highly overrepresented there.
So the numbers are high, and we need to do we need to bring those numbers down, and government input, and also all the services that are available, we all need to come to the table to bring those numbers down, yes?
Yeah, definitely. Because the numbers won't... So, you know, the prevalence study is good in that you can work out the scope of the problem, but that's what's required now. It's a service response. Mm-hmm. And the number won't decrease unless the people that are already homeless are addressed. And what we did, we also collected information on the duration that people had been homeless for. Mm-hmm. And about a quarter of those 5,800 men and women had been homeless for more than 5 months. So chronic, they've been experienced chronic homelessness. Yes. So those people often have chronic, you know, mental health, substance abuse problems and need, you know, intensive support to get out of their situation of homelessness.
Okay, a lot of work to need to be done there. Thank you so very much, Doctor, in sharing this information with us. And our thoughts go out to all the homelessness in this country, especially our veterans, well, to all our Australians out there. So thank you very much and all the best to you and your team, your family. Stay safe. And look, we'll yarn soon, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Trevor.
Take care. Bye-bye. Adela Yarn there with Dr. Fiona Hilferty, her name is. She's from University of New South Wales and talking about the data that revealed true extent of homelessness for Australian veterans and also high numbers there for First Nation veterans as well. Yarn with the Baldy One. Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, and I'm live here at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns as BBM, Bummer Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service.
and I'm sorry. I know I hurt you. I haven't been there. Just self-indulgent. I only thought of myself, a man with no cares. I can't believe you stopped by me. All the times I shamed you after my insecurity. I made mates with the bottle. I never thought about tomorrow and all the pain that I've been causing for so long. I love you, baby. Won't you come back home? So just listen before you walk away. There's gonna be somebody,
somebody
there. I know I've seen this time before. I'm gonna kick you in the face. But be, I'm sorry. No more tears wiped them away.
Don't you cry.
Baby, I'm sorry. That's all I am. Make sure the rain will
bring them brighter days.
I love you, baby.
Won't you come to me?
I'm abstaining now for good from all the shit that I've been feeling for. Changing now forever to show how much I wanna right the wrong. Just a vision of you away from me, with your loving in my life to drive me crazy. I was cold and all alone. I hated when my life was out.